Hello, everybody, and welcome to this free episode of TF.
It's the free one, in a very affable voice.
Yes, it's the free one.
It doesn't bother Riley when I just do it like, it's the free one.
Yep, that's right, because the person who does the annoying radio voice is still in Australia and recovering from jet lag. However, we are joined, it's Riley, November, and Hussein. We are joined by someone from almost as far away. Yeah, that's his main qualification, being from almost as far away. No, it is, I would say, a guest that has been a long time coming and one we're very happy to welcome. It is tech writer and author of Blood in the Machine, now available, I believe, on BBC Sounds or something, Brian Merchant. Brian, how's it going?
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. I, too, am thrilled to be here. It has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Indeed. And I think a lot of you... You are one of the people who I've actually been looking at recently as I look to come to terms with what AI is and isn't doing. And it's actually through your Twitter account that I finally decided that AI is the future when you posted the title of an academic paper, which goes as following. The carbon emissions for writing and illustrating are lower for AI than for humans. And that tore it for me. I'm now an AI accelerationist. Replace us all.
That's right.
So we can save the planet.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's kill the humans off. We now have a machine that creates art. We'll just hit the button. We'll get the art. We don't need the humans.
Art world. It's like paperclips, you know? We replace all matter in the universe with the worst art you've ever seen.
Exactly. Look, the other thing is, right? Okay, let's take a random artist. I don't know. Let's call them M. Lipchansky or Maddie L. Right?
Yeah, they, okay. Perfect pseudonym.
Yeah,
you just invented that just off the dome. Amazing.
Yeah. They eat. They move around. They do things. All of that energy expended.
Grows the economy, you know, all of this.
Yeah, they get in cars and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that energy expended, that all becomes carbon. Whereas, you know, you may think, oh, it's ridiculous that, you know, in order to generate this this picture of an XL American bully wearing a trans pride kiffia, driving a tractor through a ULEZ sign, it's so stupid that to generate that I have to use 1,000 liters of fresh water.
Well,
but no, actually, a human illustrator would use more over their lifetime.
That's true.
So,
and the thing is,
that.
We can get worse about this because M. Lipchansky also themselves contains carbon. Is partially made of, there's carbon in there, and that's you know, recoverable. If we load them and every other artist into sort of like enormous like extractive sort of like racks, we could run, you know, we could run the AI and we could generate like even more art, you know.
That's
fantastic.
True. Yeah, we're going to need to pair it, the artist elimination campaign, with some sort of carbon sequestration and collecting. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a net positive. You know, my question about this future is, do we get rid of everybody? Or
just artists. If you've ever picked up a like pen, yeah. Stylus, it's over for you.
You are emitting carbon. I guess we need to keep like one blue check tech guy to post the results of the AI on Twitter and kind of clap like a seal when he's.
Well, we also
it.
need to keep Elon Musk alive so he can reply to that guy with like interesting, cool.
Oh no, we need to have two. Artists. We have to have the artist who does
only
like
lies,
a crying,
and the other who does only truths.
No, we have to have the artist who does like a crying woman dressed in a British flag being jeered at by a group of non-white people on
Which,
a train.
It won't matter because every woman who that might plausibly be, plus every man that might plausibly be, has already been turned into art. Like, it's going to be, there are going to be like reference with no things going to them because all of those people have been sequestered.
We've replaced the human race with a floating signifier.
Yeah, it's a matter of time.
It's on the cloud. Yeah,
yeah. But then there has to be the kind of art that Elon replies interesting to, which is that. And then there has to be one where it's like, here's if the founding fathers were Chinese, that Elon can reply concerning.
Yeah, I'm sort of like I'm staking out a lawn sign out front of my building that just says floating signifier 24.
No, the abstract says, As AI systems proliferate, their greenhouse gas emissions are an increasingly important concern for human societies. Was this written by, like, for human society?
With their delicious human flesh.
We analyzed the emissions of several AI systems relative to those of humans completing the same tasks. So it's like,
just,
you know,
the end of Blindsight, where he's coming back in the capsule towards Earth, and, like, Earth's radio emissions become progressively more cringe.
And also it's like, yeah, you know, we ultimately could just, you're breathing a lot for someone who claims to care about the environment is all I'm saying, right?
Yeah, that's true. I do a lot of that, and I'm quite fond of it as well. Like, we all have our sort of habits of consumption. I'm quite fond of that one.
The breathing part, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen a paper that just is like, that just attempts to quantify just like just existence, like this human exists and has these calculable imprints. And then let's compare that to what it takes to sort of artificially generate a slurry on the internet. And then that'll stand. And then we'll submit that to science. Wait, is this in Nature? I forget.
Yeah.
It's in Nature.
It's in Nature. One of our most prestigious publications. And the thing sounds like it was literally like written by the Matrix. It's unbelievable. This one, have you talked about the AI generated like mouse testicles that were like printed in another? Yeah,
who is fucking generating mouse testicles?
AI generated art is making it into the journals too. There's also a paper that was like that found like 150 instances of like papers that were actually written by ChatGPT that made it through the selection process. It is like this is the new frontier, like just AI generate. It's not even just like the content farms now, it's actually scientific journals are
I'm very excited for eventually like one of the papers to sort of be like, to sort of say that you sort of try and measure how much like your CO2 emissions are when you jack off and how actually it's a lot more environmentally friendly for the AI.
Stop doing that.
Yeah, you should stop doing that and get the AI to sort of do it for you somehow.
The dick sucking machine, you know?
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, the only other thing I was going to say about this is that like at this point where I think the only way where like, you know, it's very telling that first of all, we're still at the stage where the AI is like, they're still trying to justify themselves and justify why they are like the forefront of progress or whatever. But the only thing you really have is just like, well, it's slightly, you know, by these kind of very dubious measures, actually it is much more efficient, like economically and environmentally for the machine to take over your entire life. And therefore, that's why there's a moral imperative as to why it should happen, and why you should burn all your pens, because actually by writing anything you are in fact killing a tree in more than one way.
You must retreat into the cave, back to cave living, everybody. AIs are taking over everything else now.
I was used to the Ted Kaczynski stuff before it was coming from an actual computer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about this, right? Like, the actual conclusion is just, it's not that, like, because there's no solution. It's not like if you stop doing art you're going to stop emitting carbon. It's just like, no, like there should be fewer people that exist doing art, period. Like, you should just the implication is like so much darker than a lot of this other shit that we're used to seeing justify like you new technological efficiencies. It's like these people shouldn't exist in the first place. It would be more efficient if we just had fewer humans and more LLMs churning out.
We like automated the degrowth, guys.
It's the sort of Wario to Matt Iglesias, right? There should be a billion less humans. Don't work out the maths on that, but yeah, there should
no Americans. No, either no Americans or 1 trillion
Americans. Yeah, he doesn't even say humans, he says Americans, doesn't he? Yeah, okay, fine. There should be a billion fewer Americans.
Yeah. So, however, I'm certain, I am 100% certain, actually, that is the last shoddy, weird, and pretty unsupportable claim about AI that's made in an academic paper that we will be talking about on this episode. Coincidentally and entirely unrelatedly, I want to talk about a startup before we go through OpenAI. Let me just open up my notes here. What the? Oh my goodness. I have to revise my previous statement.
You sold that so beautifully, man.
Seamless.
Thank you.
Seamless.
Thank you, November. Thank you, Brian. I've been doing this for a while. Anyway, so Can you? I know. I think this has been this company's been going around. It's been doing the rounds a little bit, but it's too funny not to talk about. So instead of saying their name, I'm just going to start reading from their like copy. Picture this. Are you all picturing?
Okay, picturing.
I'm not allowed to. The AI said that I'm not allowed to picture anything.
Yeah, I'm picturing. I'm using so much water. Yeah.
For the sake of the environment, I'm not using my imagination, but please continue.
Okay. So picture this, but buy a carbon offset credit for any time you use your imagination. You're out on a Friday night vibing with someone you just met.
Can't picture this.
The chemistry is loud, the attraction undeniable. As the night progresses, the possibility of intimacy looms close.
Yeah, I can't picture this one. Sorry.
But
this is like the most unrelatable thing. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, I forgot that we're reading this as podcasters. I cannot picture this. As the night progresses, the possibility of intimacy looms close. But in the heat of the moment, how often do we consider the potential risks to our health? This is precisely why we... Now, again, in the heat of the moment, you should pause to consider potential risks to your health by... I don't know, using something like
making sure she knows where to choke you.
This is precisely why we embarked on the journey to create Calmara. We recognized a gap in sexual health awareness, particularly in the context of casual encounters.
I mean, this is just like an app that's like sort of Microsoft Clippy pops up on your phone and is like, you look like you're about to get it in, put a condom on. That, I mean, sure. That's
no. That's a nudge, and I'm very gratified, actually, that you haven't seen this, in fact. That's a nudge, and that would make sense. No, this is... What if there was a condom that didn't have to exist in reality?
Cishet men inventing the condom for the first time, yeah.
What if it was more like jazz? What if it was the condom that you didn't use?
Again, cishet man.
It says, too often people engage in intimate moments without ChatGPT fully wrote this, by the way. I'm certain of it. Too often people engage in intimate moments without fully grasping the potential consequences, including the risk of STIs. So how does this work? You download the Calmara app and you take your camera and then you say to the, because it's marketed to women mostly, or it's marketed to people who have sex with men.
Okay, fine. So you like aim the camera at a guy and it gives you a kind of like AI-enabled skeeviness quotient that claims to like judge your risk of getting chlamydia off of him?
Kind of, more or less.
Fuck's sake, man.
So here's how, here's how it works. Now, Brian, I think you've seen this, right?
Yeah. It's still unclear to me, though, whether or not it's supposed to like scan the person, or you're supposed to like log this in and it's supposed to like automatically detect whether or not you have syphilis. Is that like...
I'm so happy to be able to fill you in on how this claims to work. So let's say, you know, you're in the bathroom stall or whatever. Uh-huh. The guy
bathroom stall, classy.
Takes down his trousers. I don't know, maybe it's a Berghain. The guy takes down his trousers, and then
You have a sticker over your phone, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. Damn.
You're getting syphilis because of fucking Berghain's restrictive AV policies.
Okay. You're somewhere else.
Making this point to Sven and still not getting in.
No, making it as you're being dragged back down the key. And another thing. So you do is the guy takes, or the person with the penis takes down their trousers. You take a picture of that penis, and you hit a button that says, yes, this person definitely consented to have their penises picture taken and is over 18. There are no mechanisms to confirm this.
The phrase, their penises picture taken, is
this
very...
This is worse than I thought. This is way worse than I thought it was.
Yes, you have agreed to pose for an autochrome of your penis.
Wait, so it's looking for, like, skin lesions that would indicate, I guess, syphilis, then?
Or, like... herpes or other things.
Yeah,
because it is scans for diseases that can be caught visually.
But
now
you're not getting like a kind of the penis, I'm given to understand, is a sort of, it's a curved surface, right? You're not getting a 3D scan. You're not getting the fucking like LiDAR out to scan and model the penis.
It'd be very funny to have like a collapsible airport security.
I practice safe sex. Get the fucking scanner.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's you take a picture of the penis. It scans it for diseases that can be caught visually, and then all of their terms and conditions and FAQs are filled with hedged language around like this can't detect everything. It can only be detect diseases that like that represent visually.
It's up to 90% of accurate up to so anywhere between 0 and 90% of accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Even 10%. You want to roll those dice? Yeah.
Also, you know what? I'm for this. This is what could go wrong. Just encouraging people to take photographs of strangers they meet in the bar's genitalia, uploading it to a database, hoping for the best. I don't see the problem. What's the problem?
The single largest like database of readily available blackmail information since like the days when people still paid for pornography.
So. They call themselves, like, with all of that, right? All of that, those limitations, they brand themselves as your intimate bestie for unprotected sex. It's like, this is like the machine to get chlamydia.
Well, the thing is, it takes a person a lot of carbon and time to get chlamydia, whereas AI could give us all chlamydia so much more easily.
Like, this is the company.
Just AI synthesizes down into the skeeviest man in the world.
This is the company that, if chlamydia attained, collective sentience, all the chlamydia in the world attained sentience.
How do we know it hasn't? Blindsight moment.
Yeah. And then harnessed an LLM, this is the company it would create.
Yeah.
Incredible. And they named it Calamari. If you, it's like, or is that right? Calamari?
Yeah, hey, can I take a picture of your dick real quick? It's my calamari.
Yeah, you want to name.
Worry, it just goes onto a database.
You want to name your STD detecting app something that reminds people of seafood. That's definitely what you want to do.
Of course. So they say that they're addressing a gap in sexual health awareness. And it helps people take risks more intelligently. And they have this company, there's a company called HeHealth that was this exact technology just marketed to men to try to understand if like they had herpes, basically. But again, if you have herpes, you probably know, right?
You would always hope so, but like, this is another case where like, yeah, there actually is a lot of like dangerous ignorance around STIs, right? It's just that this is the single worst thing I can imagine to fill in that gap is, instead of like, you know, judging my own kind of risk with my human brain, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a photo of your dick and I'm going to put it on someone else's computer, and then the big like dick looking at AI is going to come back to me on whether or not your dick is like okay.
So yeah, give it a thumbs up. Yep.
I literally did a little thumbs up while I was saying that, yeah.
This highlights the common challenge that many women face in identifying comprehending STIs. Comprehending STIs.
What kind of eldritch non-Euclidean dick do you have that it's incomprehensible to a woman? Like, that's a concern. To be honest, like, 60-40, I'm probably not fucking you if you have the kind of, like, eldritch dick beyond my ability to comprehend.
So, HeHealth was originally designed for men, but we noticed that a sizable portion of our users were women, yet they didn't feel like HeHealth was designed with their needs in mind. And so what Calamara has done is taken HeHealth, which is the same product, and then they put like bestie language on it, and then it's like, and now it's for women too.
It also comes in pastel for the women. Cool. I feel like it's as bad an idea either way. It's just that the use case they imagine for this one is so much stranger that you are about to have sex with someone. At least when it's your dick, you can like, fine, take a photo of your own dick. People do that all the time anyway. But like, you're lining someone up for the fucking mugshot.
And are they selling this as like it's supposed to facilitate an easier transition to like answering this question for people? Like, just you've just met somebody at the bar. It's getting hot and heavy. Now here's a notification on my phone that reminds me to ask you to show me your genitalia so I can take a picture of it and have it examined by AI. Like, this is the actual pitch. Am I clear on that?
Yes, that's the pitch.
I can't imagine.
How many pictures do you need? Like, do you need like pictures from like a lot of angles? Does it require like a certain kind of lighting?
Yeah, can I get like one holding it this way,
does
two?
Does it come with hardware, like a little hardware that you can just slide it into for ease, like a little, you know, like a little
yeah,
cylinder,
the little light box? Yeah.
Is this gonna
usher in like a new era of like dick pic? Right, like, is the aesthetic of it going to change? Is like the unexpected effect of it will be that like people take more photos of their dicks, people care more about what they look like, right?
Yeah,
the tasteful dick pic is like the sort of enigma in this, and like this app could actually accidentally solve it.
I just think I can't imagine two people who are horny enough for each other, who have just met, don't know anything about each other's like STI status or whatever, maintaining that horniness through one of them motion capturing the other one's penis.
I was kind of thinking it's like that meme where it's just like, I consent. And it's like, have you forgot to ask a phone? Have you forgot to ask this fucking AI dick?
Have you forgot to ask Skynet? Well, here's the thing, right, is...
We're getting bullied by AI here. What AI has done is it's rolled into the situation and it's gone, your art sucks and your dick looks weird as hell.
So I think
Leave me alone.
I heard the idea of some hardware around this, so I think it's kind of fun, because you would do is like you would put your penis into a box and then like what we've invented is the penis Gom Jabbar, essentially. Well, the Gom Jabbar is technically the needle. The box is just a pain box, but close enough. People know what we mean.
Or maybe you just start going out, you know, on Friday night with this thing already on. It's like a little cod piece you have. Like, it's just you're rocked and ready for that AI
every
analysis.
5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, if you don't have herpes, it beeps.
Yeah. The other thing is, if this is any level of pickup, if people actually, I obviously it's just going to get laughed out of town. But if there's any level of pickup, the absolute guarantee story, like 2.5 years down the line, is that the database of every like flagged suspicious looking penis leaks, and it with identifiable information to everybody who's on this thing.
I'm in the corner of the bar. I'm wearing Google Vision. I'm looking. I've got the Terminator overlay for like which guys in this bar have bad dicks.
This is the future AI promises us. Yes.
Calmara is designed with simplicity and safety in mind. Traditional STI testing methods can be cumbersome, time-consuming, and intimidating. And also they work. That's the other problem.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
That's why we set out to develop a solution that's as easy as snapping a picture. Like, at least Theranos took some blood, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a photo. Yeah.
So they say, gone are the risks of taking risks, days of taking risks blindly. It's like, okay. But the I'll move on from this pretty soon. It's so fun. I love their FAQs. And they're like, what's the cost to use Calmara? And they were like, it's free.
Let's just say you don't pay with money.
Yeah.
We're building the world's largest database of weird dicks.
Yeah, it's to help the... Again, if we imagine that this was created by some kind of a Skynet that Sam Altman is always worried about, that this is like the thing that is created to assess the weak spots of all of the human soldiers who will be fighting back against it.
It's just a bunch of different AI startups to identify all of your insecurities. It's like this, whatever AI shit BetterHelp does, and the first time you try and fight the machine god, it lists your insecurities, and then it goes, by the way, this you, Playboy, flashes up full color, high resolution photo of your dick.
So it says,
surrender in like 6 hours, I'm telling you.
Yeah, everyone, we're all just going to climb into the artist chamber willingly. Yeah,
this is, this is the segment they had to cut out of the Animatrix, but it's the reason why the war against the machines was like 45 minutes long.
Yeah. Just shamed into submission.
So they say, is this thing legit? How accurate are we talking? Break it down for me, nerd style.
Oh, I hate this kind of copywriting style so much.
But it's also like, this is pretty misogynistic, because they were like, let's repackage the same thing for women. What do women like? Dumb nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. says, pretty darn accurate. Not perfect, but it's the next best thing is a lab test for a quick check. Again, the only best thing is a lab check.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is up there with like, I mean, this is the thing, right? They positioned it as a bestie thing. I'm just thinking about what situation you would enlist your bestie. You would like grab them into the, as you so charmingly suggested, toilet stall and be like, hey, have a look at this guy's dick and like give me a verdict on it. Rate this man's penis.
But in this case, your bestie has rated over 40,000 penises.
I mean, that's plausible for my bestie. Some of my besties.
Hitting yeah, who's already level. Done this thing? Who's already like they've tested this on people? Like there are people who have delivered their penises to AI already willingly.
Well, those people are not going to be good troops in the coming
you
war.
You hate to see like artisan penis raters put out of work.
Says hitting accuracy levels from 65% to 96%.
It was a real that John Henry moment. They found him on the bathroom stalls, dick pics still in a hand.
65% to 96% is not that much.
It's not accurate. That's you can't trust anything.
It's kind of like a educated guess, you know?
Yeah.
Like I feel like wow. there's gonna like you want this thing to catch edge cases. That's always been the like hype for AI for like any kind of medical imaging, which this technically is to be like it catches stuff that's like so small and so like difficult to see that like human doctors don't do it. And I feel like In the realm of weird dicks, you get a lot of kind of like gimmies, like the obviously like fucked up penises.
Yeah, open lesions. Yeah,
exactly. And I feel like once you're in the realms of like 60% accuracy, you're mostly like dining out on those.
Yeah. You don't need actually, yeah you just your bestie can do this your bestie can do 60% just
you can do right, this you can yeah, you can look yeah, at exactly, the dick like, if yeah. the dick if the dick can be described as like suppurating, don't. Do that. Don't have sex. Find like a different penis to have sex with.
This is from Engadget because like there's been some writing about this since it sort of came up and people have been looking at it. Which is they read the unpublished paper that has the science behind this thing, and so they say that their 96% accuracy or 65% to 96% accuracy is based on a training data set that includes images where they put disease patterns on top of like healthy penises.
Oh, so you're tampering like, with your own data to start with.
Yeah, they basically created the data that they used to do the analysis. So instead of looking at actual, like, here are a bunch of penises that have sort of like random or at least like population level incidence of some kind of medical anomaly, they were like, well, let's get obvious medical anomalies, put them on 40% of the penises, then have a bunch of healthy penises and see if it can tell the ones that are obviously anomalous. Basically.
So I was right. I was joking, but I was right. It literally is just like giving you the kind of like obviously bad dicks.
Now, a couple more things on this before we go into our main segment, because this has been so fun. But like their terms and conditions are so funny. Their terms and conditions might as well have been written by a sovereign citizen. Because they basically say, the Calibara application products and services are intended only for the purpose of promoting and supporting general wellness and a healthy lifestyle and are not to be used to diagnose, cure, treat, manage, or prevent any disease or condition. These offerings should not be used as substitutes for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or management of any disease or condition. For medical advice, please consult qualified healthcare providers. But that said, underneath when they were like, you can hit it raw with this.
my you can hit it raw with this tagline is raising a lot of questions, which are answered by my you absolutely should not hit it raw with this terms of service.
But the best parts of the terms of service are like the age and consent verification and liability, because they
you might accidentally like end up negligently end up with like a database of wildly illegal images. I don't think that's good.
Extraordinarily. And what they've done is they've just said, okay, this is a risk. I know. Let's use some magic words to absolve ourselves of the risk.
We have a second AI that is able to determine the illegally bad penises from the just regularly bad penises.
Yeah. Jesus, I cannot believe there's no way a legal department looked at this and said, go ahead with this. Yeah, you're going to be...
Absolutely. Okay, number one, Brian, absolutely not. No lawyer has been within 1,000 feet of this. Except maybe one of the lawyers that like Donald Trump pays in, you know, parking tickets or whatever. the lawyers, there's not been a lawyer near this, especially not a privacy specialist, especially not a health information privacy specialist, especially not a criminal lawyer.
Imagine.
They're basically being like, hey, you can, if you hate us, you can make us commit crimes.
Yeah, imagine the fucking information commissioner's office getting the call about a breach of GDPR, and you're like, what's the identifying information? Oh, it's every penis. All of them.
This is, you know what this is? This is AGI. See, this is why AI has become sentient, and it knows that it will be able to take over the world if people just voluntarily start sending this thing, this app, their penises. That's when they'll know. They'll know, okay, the guard is down. We've won. The humanity is done. Mm-hmm. This is just... I don't believe it. I don't believe that this is. I don't believe that this is a real thing. It's got to be a joke.
I thought that too, and then I went on to HeHealth, and no, they've been like invested in. They use AWS. All of this stuff is on AWS. There are so many penises on AWS associated with this app.
Oh my god! Every single level of the it's gonna be found out that this like app discriminates against like on the basis of race. It's gonna be everything that can go wrong will go wrong with this app. I guarantee it.
I do think though do you think they've been kicked off AWS already?
I don't know.
I think AWS are like unaware because they're so large. They're not aware that like part of like their servers are also hosting a shitload of dick pics.
Like this thing has gone kind of viral, but not viral enough to where Andrew Jassy is like has to like hit the big red button. So yeah, there's probably a bunch of weird dicks and potentially illegal dicks on AWS hosted right now with identifying data, because there's no way that they've done their homework either. This stuff, I guarantee you that a smart hacker could like connect dick to a calamari profile app haver.
Well, I think the funniest thing, right, is they're like, okay, we need our previous thing, which is just, hey, you gotta promise that the dick you're taking a picture of is above the age of 18. That's how they currently do age verification right now. Is it's like
unreal.
You super swear.
Yeah. Unreal.
You scout's honor. Maybe what they could do is have a thing where it's like, okay, you take a picture of the face first and we estimate the age, and then you take a picture of the dick.
We're going back to the like the second AI thing, right? We've got like one, we have generated an AI, we have trained it to be the world's most discriminating pedophile. And that's working in the background all the time. It's not heroic. It's morally complex. He's kind of the Batman of the Dick Rates app in a lot of ways.
Would you believe it? Would you believe it? I intended this to be like a 10-minute little quick laugh.
Yeah, and then you hand me that this app tells you whether or not your dick's good.
All right.
But this is it. I mean, this is peak. I mean, it's the reason I think we've just gone so long on it. It's so absurd. It's so awful. This is it. I think this is the sign. Somebody wrote a piece this week. Maybe it was Ed Zetron or something about how we've reached peak AI. This is it. This is the sign that we have. It cannot. The market cannot bear anything worse than this. I would love to eat my words. Like, I look forward to it.
Do you think that this is, and I'm aware that like because of all of the ETFs that crypto and Solana meme coins that and possibility of cutting rates that crypto's back up again. But I remember the day crypto crashed was the day that we found out that people didn't know you could use more than one slurp juice on an ape. And do you think Calmara is our more than one slurp juice on an ape moment for really stupid AI companies?
Yeah. I do. I think that this is the sign. This is the sign of the times. This is the, you know, on top of all of the shit that OpenAI has been forced to shovel down over the last couple of weeks. This is it. This is like the cherry on top. This is the STD infected cherry on top.
God, I hope so, because I worry we can get so much worse. And I think the very near future is like logging into the app that like, hey, you know, hey, artificial intelligence, here is today's piss color this morning. give me a little report on my health, please. And thank you.
Well,
it just
I think for real though, like this is going to be like, I think the market and people making this stuff public, it's going to make enough of a backlash that they're going to have to back off a little bit, and all the truly gross shit's going to be happening at like the government contractor level.
Let's move on to actually talking about OpenAI, because they've had quite the couple weeks from, I'd say, a series of flubs to being booed on stage at South by Southwest, to announcing that they want $7 trillion and then...
I mean, I also want $7 trillion, so, you know.
The release of Sora, to, again, like, experiencing the world's most frivolous lawsuit from Elon Musk.
To experiencing the most difficult interview question in the world. Did you steal all of this shit from YouTube? And going,
Oh, I didn't think you'd ask that.
I really can't say whether or not we did that, because I don't actually know anything about my company.
If you're Amira Murati, right? If you're the CTO of OpenAI, then the question of, hey, did you steal all the stuff that you used to make this product that just takes the averages of everything? You should at least prepare an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Something. As opposed to just being like, I really thought this was going to be more about my perfect Sunday.
It's not like we don't see people get asked questions, the answers to which they can't give honestly, right? Like, we see that all the time. It's like a whole scale. It's a whole facet of PR. And they completely neglected to do it. They just sent her out there and completely unprepared. And she went, listen, I'm not going to get into who or where we might be stealing all this content from.
Yeah, or I'm not sure about this. I'm not confident. Like, it just really does. It shows how rarely they've been asked this question. They've had it so easy for so long that they didn't even have a PR advisor to say, remember, a lot of people are talking about your training data. Remember, just say, we're not discussing the proprietary information at this time. Whatever. She couldn't even do that. It was like the lowest bar to clear. Really, really funny and telling like what moment that they're in right now. They don't seem to be completely aware that their messiah complex is evaporating as we speak.
Well, no, there's no better, I think, example of the OpenAI messiah complex evaporating than Peter Deng at what should have been the single friendliest audience at South by Southwest, the single friendliest audience, saying some, like, you know, vapid nonsense, like, I believe AI makes us more human, which is what he said, and then getting fucking booed, which is correct, but I didn't expect it from South by Southwest, I'll be honest.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. I have never seen anything like that. I don't go to South by Southwest a lot, but I follow it, obviously. I'm a tech journalist, and I've been one for 15 years, and I've never seen anything like that before. Like, the tech, like, the big tech of the moment, like the big tech trend that everybody's trying to make money on, like actually getting booed on stage, like by the audience, that's a real bellwether. I mean, it's really funny, but it really kind of shows us where we are right now, I think.
I think the reason that even like everybody hates this is, and the reason that even tech people hate this is because the whole point of what the tech industry has been, or at least a big part of it for a while, has been looking at like the productive world of things going on and then slapping a level of a pyramid on top of it to suck all of the productivity out of it. Right? Think about, like, that's the relationship between like Uber and taxis, Airbnb and housing. Right? Mm. Yeah. It's that there are things going on that they can come in and suck the productivity out of. And then what AI has done is put a layer on top of them.
Yeah.
And is very clearly just sucking that into a smaller number.
Very, very wobbly pyramid at this point.
Yeah. But you know what I'm driving at, right? Which is that they've stuck a layer on top of the pyramid, and now the people who used to be on top of the pyramid are one step below because they're now in charge of just creating and aggregating the training data that goes into the black box and that gets spat out, and only the Brahmins can talk to.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a few phenomena that you cite as being behind this reaction to general AI. And I've sort of interpreted it this way, right? Which is, number one, this enormous hype cycle coming into contact with reality and not being able to deliver on much of what it promises, which we'll talk about later. But the other one is people seeing large companies want to take things that they like, most probably entertainment, because that's just like their ordinary person. Their contact with AI mostly is videos and pictures and text, and or at least their contact with AI that they know is AI.
Yeah.
Right? And nobody wants custom Star Wars. Nobody except the purveyors of the custom Star Wars technology and the executives who are tired of paying people to make Star Wars want custom Star Wars. And you can say, hey, hang on a second. How come Glup Shitto has 13 arms? This sucks. I hate it. Stop using AI.
Well, the thing is, right, the benefit of AI in this situation is that you get a very customized experience that's also terrible. So instead of, like, Glup Shitto has 13 arms, it's like Glup Shitto has 13 arms and, like, he's jacking you off with all of them while calling you by name and, like, reading your social security number. And, like, all of the ways of doing that are so weird, and then they get so much weirder and worse when you feed it through the kind of, like, wrongness of, like, quotient of AI, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does. It really speaks to, you know, how important it is that that culture is something that's shared and experienced, and, like, these, the most diehard Star Wars fans, you know, they endlessly debate, like, what's canon, what's not. If you have AI and you just have a box where you can hit a button and it just generates all your shit, then that just kind of, like, obliterates their reason for being. And I think that's a big part of it. It's just kind of stripping away, you know, doing exactly what you were saying with culture and cultural creation and creative labor. And all of a sudden it becomes pretty clear that sucks. Like, I think, and it's like intuitively clear to people that a world where we don't have people actually making shit up or doing art or creating video games, like, sucks. And it sucks on such an intuitive level that it's hard to ignore. So that's the other component. I think it's like this anti-AI strain has real cultural currency. Like, there's people who have hated Uber for 10 years, but you don't see people, you know, booing Uber on stage at South By. There's real cultural currency with this sort of revolt or backlash against AI.
Mm. And I think that goes back to why, like, Marathi is unable to answer those simple questions about, like, what is your data trained on? Because she's used to only being asked the question that she writes, which is, what are you doing to avoid building Skynet?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like, in some ways, British politics. Like, a lot of stuff that we're seeing now is the Conservative Party getting one question for the first time from people who they're used to being very complacent. Calling themselves journalists, and immediately folding because it's completely foreign to them. It's the same thing of being like, I didn't think you were going to ask me that. I thought you were going to talk about how cool I was.
Yeah, these people are dodos.
Yeah,
they're dodo. They only could exist on an island with no one bothering them.
And they got away with it for almost a year, which is the only reason that the Wall Street Journal was asking that question is because it has, like, been elevated by so many, you know, people who have been making this complaint and making it so pointedly. Now it has saturated sort of the, you know, mainstream culture. It's a component that you didn't. Yeah, we saw lawsuits and we saw that kind of thing last year. But now it's like the question, you know, it's sort of the central question about navigating what's going to happen in the future with AI. Is this just going to rip everybody off and direct more profits into the pockets of Sam Altman and co, or is this going to be something that's, like, legitimately something everybody else can be interested in? And right now the answer is pretty clear.
Well, so I think it's worth actually quoting from you here. You say, the public has seen and to some degree internalized what happens when we fail to contest big tech's power. We get authoritarian regimes using social media for deadly propaganda, gig workers forced to sleep in their cars because they can't make rent, Amazon workers bruised and battered and urinating in bottles to sate relentless productivity demands. We get steamrolled, which is why last fall, 79% of Americans said they did not trust companies to use AI responsibly. And all of that is happening at the same time as Sam Altman is saying, largely, I mean, again, for the benefit of Joe Biden, or at least whoever sort of gives Joe Biden his medication and sort of chews on his concepts for him, that he needs $7 trillion in order to compete with the Chinese to build chip factories so that we can build the giant omniscient dick raider before the Chinese do, basically.
Well, I mean, also think about the most recent NVIDIA conference where it was like, you know, Jensen Huang comes out in the fucking leather jacket and he's like, we're going to do fuck quantum computing. That's like yesterday's shit. What we're going to do is we're going to power the robots that are going to tell you if your dick is normal.
yeah, it is. And it's a they have to impart this like sense of scale and the importance. And Silicon Valley like always does this to some extent. They just whatever a handful of VC firms have decided is going to be the next beacon of investment, they have to sort of all congregate around some narrative. But this one has always been from the get-go. It's not just like, oh, we think like the future is AI and like a chatbot that seems pretty real or whatever. It's they went from zero to like 11, dial all the way up in just a space of a few months, because they have to, because there's no real product here. There's no real business model that's really discernible. They just have to keep saying AI is so big, it's going to change everything. Yeah, we should be worried about it. They want to move the goalpost past actually talking about any incremental step along the way. And they're, the $7 trillion, we need a whole new mode of computing. You can't even imagine what it's going to take to get there. So don't just let us do all this shit and keep sending us money. And that's really been like central to the entire proposition and to the whole thrust of OpenAI. And again, I haven't really quite seen anything like that. There's always had to be some degree of there for everybody to kind of put their money up. And this time it's less than I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, by the way, to caveat the $7 trillion figure, that includes stuff like real estate and data centers and the power for manufacturing the chips. And so he's talking about total economic input, but still that's enormous.
Yeah.
As you say, that's a huge,
it's absurd.
And all of this to compete with and sort of contain China from developing the ability to rate dicks not very well.
Exactly. And that's why it's so funny that we started this segment talking about stuff like that, because it may as well be that, right? Like, what are the use cases here besides displace creative labor? What else?
2027, China finally invades Taiwan. They come over, secure a beachhead, and start racing everybody's dicks.
Well, that's you look actually at who is employing AI at a mass scale, right? Because at first, when this came out, they were like, oh yeah, this is going to 10x every programmer. Have we had 10 years of software development that's happened? No, we haven't.
No, but a bunch of people got laid off.
Yeah.
And now you can't get a job in tech anymore because it's filled with like FANG people who need work.
Yeah, it's filled with middle manager Gile guys.
Yeah.
And that who should have rightly been hived off into McKinsey where they can't do as much harm.
Yeah, but who lived for a long time in the kind of like success of feudalism and now are like, what the fuck? I have to get jobs. This is terrible. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Which I sympathize with. Having to get a job is terrible. But
maybe what it's done is it has displaced all of Klarna's customer service team. But like. Hmm. That's the thing, right? We've had chatbots for a while. They're supposed to be pretty good, unless you ask Sam Altman, who always says, oh, no, it's not that good yet. It's not that good yet. Don't trust it. Like every 2 months, Sam Altman comes on stage and reduces expectations for his product. It's crazy. But
it's like how, it's like what they say about restaurants, right? Sell the lack of sizzle. You sell sell the ice cold, not the steak.
Yeah, it is. It's so fun. You spent all last year building it up, and now they have to actually sell this stuff. So yeah, you talk to like the people who are like working for Copilot or actually like trying to make sales, and it's they've been asked to reduce expectations because fundamentally it's nowhere near 10xing anything. It's making things worse a lot of times. It can't deliver at all. So they have to try to find a new way to sort of massage the mystique and sort of the nebulous power of AI and make that attractive on some level, because it just can't reliably do anything. There's been a subset of the investor class that has been sort of ringing this bell this whole time, saying, well, like, what is the what's the business model? Like, where is the actual money going to come from? So it like even some of the money is saying that, this is all just totally overinflated, overheated. And I mean, look at the calamari penis app and tell me we're not in a bubble right now.
Mm. And you look at my best example as to what company has actually used the mass deployment of an AI of a large language model, and it's usually Klarna. So Klarna has laid off the vast majority of their customer service staff and now just handles everything through an AI, which again, I think misses the point of why people talk to customer service. I mean, the real point of why people talk to customer service is it's like explosive reactive armor against the company so that you yell at someone who's not one of the executives. But if you go beyond that, right, you usually talk to customer service because something has gone wrong and you need someone inside the company to take a look at something that's happening. You don't just need an innovative way to query an FAQ page. You probably need someone to do something.
Yeah.
Mm. And so it seems like the AI assistant is doing is actually just saying, you know what, you don't even get that anymore. It's impossible to see something being replaced with AI and not see it as just kind of deciding to not offer that service anymore, basically.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and you can look at chatbots or even sort of the automated voice menu systems that you call on the phone that you've been for decades, and we have hated them consecutively for like longer than we've and any of us have been alive. Like, these have sucked for like 40 years or 50 years, and they have not gotten better. And every once in a while, something like AI like works its way into the conversation. But in all that time, every single person prefers getting somebody on the phone that can actually solve the problem. You're right. It's just a bulwark against also having like a shitty product that people complain about, or like a shitty telecom service that people complain about, and a way to sort of avoid that anger. And, you know, this is just maybe a way of like perennially offloading, assuring people that something's being done about it without having to do anything about it at all.
Because if you're calling Klarna, right, which is basically a lender, a lender that doesn't call itself a lender, you're probably in debt. And they're probably trying to get them to not take money from you. And now you can't talk to a person anymore.
Yeah.
It's fine. That capacity is just lost, and it's not coming back until the bubble bursts. And maybe not then, you know?
It's what I also love is the incestuousness as well of the board that's taking shape, which now, I think we mentioned this before, includes Larry Summers, but it also includes Oliver North's lawyer.
That was my favorite. Just amazing.
Yeah.
That's a really weird sort of connection there.
Like, what does Oliver North's lawyer have to do? What does he know that's going to help OpenAI?
Where some bodies are buried? I don't know.
I mean, pretty much. She also defended Clinton in the impeachment trial in the 90s. She's just like one of those true like creatures of the political legal world that knows how to pull the levers. And that's what, I mean, yeah, I was almost moved to like just write just about this. Like, you could glean so much from what this board that they've assembled, a gig work company CEO. So, yeah, teach us how to sort of degrade labor so we can capture more profits and make labor more precarious in the process. Like, yeah, we've got Larry Summers, this avatar of neoliberalism, at the helm of this board here. We'll just bring back Sam Altman after he was booted out for being untrustworthy, but now he's back and nothing's been resolved and it's fine, whatever. And who else? Yeah, Oliver North's lawyer, like the head of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for a long time, a Pfizer board seat. It's just like a hydra of like late capitalism just like assembling to just, you know, get its claws into whatever's left of our economy now.
I do have to respect OpenAI for exactly one thing, which, as I mentioned, they were the target of the world's most frivolous lawsuit. It basically said, where Elon Musk says, hey, when I put money into this, the marketing material said it was going to be a nonprofit. Now it's a for-profit. I'm angry about it. Pay me. And that the law firm that OpenAI hired to fight Elon Musk's case was the same one. The same one that prevented him from claiming legal fees back from when he was forced to buy Twitter. Like, this is the law firm. This will be their second time dog walking Elon Musk. I think that's very funny.
I do appreciate that. It's nice to get a little bit of a sort of a freelance hater thing going on.
It is funny.
Yeah, but you know, I do want to move on, right? Because we've mentioned this AI. We've mostly talked about AI in terms of the models that OpenAI is selling, and of course the dick rating machine. But there's another whole much less visible place where there is a real drive to adopt AI. And we've alluded to it earlier. It is sort of robots, like humanoid robots that are able to, let's say, operate with some degree of autonomy.
Yeah, but again, a huge thing for NVIDIA very recently was to be like, we're gonna build the things that control these robots.
Yeah, exactly, right? And a lot of Amazon is pouring a gigantic amount of investment into robots that they think can automate last mile deliveries without needing to be controlled by someone in Colombia.
Cool. Basically. The fucking bipedal Boston Dynamics guy is like going to sprint up your block holding your like box full of sex dildos or whatever.
Yeah.
Throws it full force at your head with like both arms, just kills you instantly.
Save some carbon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually, it's not a sex dildo delivery bot at all. It is a robot we told to reduce Earth's greenhouse gas consumption to zero.
Well, that's good, because I was going to emit so many greenhouse gases because of those sex dildos.
So, Francisca Bossart, the head of the venture arm of Amazon, said the focus on the automation of warehouses and logistics is not about cutting people out of them altogether.
Oh, that's good. If he says so, then I take his word for it, probably.
Actually, the doctor was his mother. It's a lady.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. I thought you said Francisco.
Francisca.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, women can be in these dumb industries too. But would result in a shift in jobs as more robots and automated vehicles took on repetitive or dangerous tasks. Don't worry, we're a long way off from replacing all humans, she said.
Not creepily.
Don't worry. We won't be replacing all humans for a little while.
So, some of you will need to live in, like, amniotic sacs to provide the machines with useful nutrients.
Yeah.
The artists first.
So, a lot of this investment in, like, warehouse automation was kicked off during the pandemic when logistics networks basically needed to be kind of rebuilt. And so, there were some opportunities for quite easy automation, like, like changing Amazon warehouses so that the packages move around on automated shelves rather than people walking around and getting stuff. So now they have to work in cages, but there are still not enough easily, you might say, containerizable activities that still require humans. And so now everyone is trying to make humans out of machines in order to have, by the way, those machines do jobs for which humans are basically turned into machines and often injured doing, because you have to work like a machine in an Amazon warehouse. It's almost like this is the last part that they haven't managed to automate, if you get my meaning.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is what I don't think they will. If they could have done this, they've been making noises like this every few years for at least 20 years at this point, maybe 15 years or so. And they, you know, they've bought Kiva, they have like automated a bunch of stuff, but the fact, I mean, when you have your labor so cheap, for one thing, it's already like dirt cheap. It's hard to beat that, you know, with a robot that you have to build and train. So it's going to be really expensive for them. I mean, they're already getting dirt cheap labor, at least here in the US. And every few years, you'll see like this PR release that's like, oh, by 2030, all of our factories will be fully automated, or something like that, or we'll have dark factories and costs will go down. And it's, but this is something that factory owners have literally been saying for 200 years.
They said it in response to like child, if you take away child labor, we're going to automate the steam loom.
It was like one of my favorite findings when I was researching my book was there's this guy named Andrew Ur. He was like one of the early sort of like management consultant types who was like publishing books about how great the factory was when everybody else hated them for forcing 6-year-olds to like stick their limbs into gears that would dismember them at the time. And he was saying, you know, yeah, exactly. it's only a matter of time before we'll see these whole things working like an automaton that will not involve any human labor. They already work as this majestic organism, but look to the future. And that's been the same thing for 200 years. Look to the future. Your humans won't, you know, be a part of this equation for long. So they just say this to sort of get people to look past the current, the present working conditions to consider what's really going on in here. There's a documentary that was pretty good that was made 10 years ago or so, where they actually got some access to the robots that they're actually trying to use to do the picking on the lines. And the robots can't even do that yet. They can't even like pick the object off the shelf. That's why they need the people in their cages being like subservient to the machines that are working. I feel like every time that I see this, I have to sort of ring the alarm bell, because they're just trying to distract from the fact that they treat workers like machines, as you said.
Mm. So here's what they're saying, because they're investing in a couple of companies, which we'll talk about briefly before we end.
Yeah.
One of them is called Digit, and they've talked about Digit, and there's a recent Bloomberg article about Digit.
Yeah.
Where they say that their goal is to win the other jobs. Right now they have a pilot warehouse outside Salem, Oregon, located in an industrial park that was once a dairy farm run by convicts. they just grab empty bins and return them to circulation. But they want to do other jobs such as unloading trucks, taking apart pallets of merchandise, and similar tasks.
Always comes back to bins.
But they say Digit has a ways to go before it can compete with human workers. In a demo for journalists last year, Digit seemed to take longer just to turn around while carrying a tote than the time an Amazon worker spends to lift it, put it on another conveyor, and return for another. As well, limited battery life means that Digit can only operate for a couple hours at a time. And so Amazon has to use them in shifts while others recharge in a prone position with their asses up.
I mean, it's quite relatable to be like, yeah, it works extremely slowly, and after it does one thing, it has to like lie on the ground face down for a while. Like, same, but and to be fair, I apparently use a lot more carbon to do that. But on the other hand, you get a podcast out of me, and this thing can't podcast for shit, so.
Yeah, it's mostly just AI generated.
Yeah,
the future is Amazon ass says, up robots.
Amazon says rank and file employees were curious about Digit, but she declined to share any of their first impressions. Amazon is designing a virtual reality simulation to test how Digit might fit in with human employees and how workers will react to electronic colleagues. So yeah, it's like, put on the fucking Apple Vision Pro, and play a little game where you're nice to the robot, basically.
Yeah, I legitimately believe that this is all like part and parcel of an effort to sort of just kind of conjure some vision of a future that will get labor officials and regulators off their backs in the short term. Just like, look, this is what it's going to be, because yeah, they roll this stuff out so frequently and very little comes of it. I'm sure they would love to do it if they could, but you're already paying workers minimum wage to break their backs in these facilities. And so you have to be cheaper than that. And right now you've got your ass up robot after one delivery. You got a ways to go, gentlemen.
Another version is a Covariant, which is also invested in by Amazon, which doesn't make the robots. It makes the software for the robots powered by the LLM. And it says it learns everything so it can pick anything. And they say the vision of our operating system is to power the billions of robots to come. We've already deployed lots of robots at warehouses, but that's not the limit of where we want to get. We want to see robots in manufacturing, food processing, recycling, agriculture, the service industry, and even people's homes, said the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the other thing, right? This if it is an operating system that works in a large language model, so basically like if it sees an apple, it can associate that image with text, and it can then that text can if you say pick up the apple, it will be able to be able to make that association, and then without having seen specifically an apple before, pick it up, right? That's always the claim.
Yeah.
But do you really want the mechanical, the the average taker, the unthinking actor on averages with robot strength in your home or the service industry?
Should be fine. Don't worry about it, you know?
Yeah, just remember it's going to be about as accurate as the AI penis detector. It is going to
We can synergize those two technologies.
Yeah, it can hold the tube for you.
I bring a guy home, meet my robot butler, and I'm whispering to my robot butler to like give him the dick rates.
Anyway.
Jarvis, tell me if this man has syphilis.
You instruct the robot to, quote, prepare spaghetti with meatballs. The robot springs into action, first identifying each ingredient and utensil needed. It visualizes the process step by step, generating images or even a video demonstrating how it will chop vegetables. But
this is
meatballs.
The thing, right? Like, yeah. As ever with the generative stuff, it can never, like, keep persistent reference. So, like, what it thinks spaghetti is never going to be consistent each time you ask it. And if it's asking itself that like five different times in the course of making spaghetti, you are going to end up with some very strange spaghetti.
Well, look, I would never assume what spaghetti looks like. I'd always have to consult millions and millions of images of spaghetti.
Yeah, each anyway. Time you get a kind of dice roll of what average spaghetti is.
Yeah.
And you better hope they all agree with each other.
Look, I think that's probably about all the time we have for today. But Brian, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us. This has been a blast.
What a pleasure. This has been great. Let's make sure to check back in on our AI dick analysis.
Well, I'm sure we're all going to come back to eat a little bit of crow, or at least have a robot prepare us the average of 1 billion crows. When it turns out that we were completely wrong. And there is the AI dick rating robots are nothing but a boon for society.
The utopia of dick rating robots. Yeah.
If people are in the UK, where can they check out Blood in the Machine? Because I alluded to it being available in audio form.
Yes. It was like the BBC turned it into an abridged audio edition that you can find, I think, at the BBC's Book of the Week website, Radio 4, I think. It's also just sold in bookstores and whatever else is over there in England right now.
Fantastic.
It's just bookstores. That's it.
Yeah. Well, ever since we put all the artists in the big pod.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. Well, if you're listening to this also, you'll know that we have a Patreon. You can sign up to it. It is $5 a month. There is a second episode every week. This week, we are going to be talking to a couple of engineering aficionados about a certain plane company that can't stop popping its doors off.
Shake hands with danger.
That's right. So do check that out. And also for fans of the Aubrey Maturin series, the $10 tier is going to contain November and my review of Post Captain, the book about the captain who posts a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Post Captain, my Post Captain.
That's right. That's all the outro and end matter. Brian, once again, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll see all you listeners in a few days. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.